We return now to our church.
Sure. I would say that there are probably 300 or so of us, possibly more than that, gathered at WBAI's conference on Southeast Asia, and we're defining Southeast Asia broadly to include Southeast Asia and ramifications in the United States. This is a stall, and I'm stalling to allow David Dellinger, who is in the building, time to catch his breath and get to the microphone, get to the podium where I am now. Coming up later in the afternoon, we hope to hear from David Mixner, but we got late word that he is ill today and is at the doctor's. Maybe he, I don't know where the doctor is, whether the doctor is within listening range or not, and possibly he is, and if so, and if the doctor says that David can come, we're told he'll be here. We also are going to hear from Andy Stapp of the American Servicemen's Union, from Adam Walensky of the New York Moratorium, and also from, we hope, a representative of the high school student movement, though that's not for sure, and I don't know who it's going to be if it is for sure. Let's see. The phone number is 826-0880. It's always guaranteed to get a groan out of them what's here and them what's at home. Yeah, that's a nice idea. Let's all say it together, all right? A unison pitch from everyone here at the church. We'll do it as a unison dial, all right? This is something we do for the slow learners in the audience.
WBAI, New York.
So all of you out there who may have had trouble keeping those seven digits together, and if you're calling from out of state, this gives you a chance to do the area code, which is 212. Move to your phone. Be careful not to... Hi, Andy. Be careful not to trip over the avocados or the dirty dishes which you have stacked in the living room because you've been so transfixed by the WBAI marathon that you haven't had a chance to wash anything for since 6 p.m. last Friday. Okay, now you've obviously gotten to the phone and your index finger is poised and you've just inserted it into the first number, which is?
8.
Now. The next number is?
2.
And after that?
6.
And here's the big one.
4.
And another?
8.
And yet another?
8.
And now take a deep breath, and it's another?
5.
Fantastic. The switchboard should be all lit up. Now we're ready to continue with our program today. And the next speaker is David Dellinger, one of the Chicago 7-8. One of the Chicago 8, absolutely right. A man who has been active in the peace movement for more than 25 years. I'm not going to say any more. Dave Dellinger. Right on.
The people are standing here at the church.
Well, I think I'm a little late, and I haven't had a chance to catch up on what was going on. But I'm a little late for a good reason. I left Washington, where we're making some plans for the protest on Saturday. I got to LaGuardia Airport, and it took an hour for the taxi cab to get in here. And the reason is because the whole country is upset over Nixon's invasion of Cambodia, over the bombing of North Vietnam, over the Kent massacre, and over what's happening to the Black Panthers and other black liberation fighters. And as a result, my taxi got held up by protests and marches which were tying up the streets. I guess I perhaps should start by saying a few words about what's on some people's minds, at least, about Washington. The fact is that what's going on, I'm glad to say, is coming up spontaneously all over the country, and it's not being planned and couldn't be planned and shouldn't be planned by any small group of, quote, peace leaders meeting in Washington or anywhere else. But I have just come from there where various student strikers, anti-war activists, and others have been sort of comparing notes on what's going on and what ought to happen. And the first thing that has happened is that Nixon is trying to co-opt and defuse the movement, supposedly by going into the courts and asking for a suspension of a 15-day permit law, which never should have existed in the first place. Shows not that he's changed his colors, but that he's scared. And so he's arranged for the anti-war movement to hold a mammoth rally by the Washington Monument. And the government is so anxious to have it happen this way that it is setting up a speaker stand, supplying the loudspeakers. And in fact, I haven't met with the government, because I didn't think that was the most relevant thing to be doing. But some people did, and I think they asked them if they wanted to supply the speakers as well. Perhaps Spiro Agnew. But the determination of everybody that I've talked with is to go to the White House. Now, there's a couple of reasons for that. The first is that the days of ineffective dissent are over. We're not interested in protesting. We're not interested, as we once were, in, quote, surfacing the opposition to the war. We're interested in being part of a campaign to stop the war. And so in Washington, at the White House, we're going to serve notice on Nixon that the days of quiet dissent and returning to business as usual are over. We're serving notice on him that the strikes that are already taking place in several hundred colleges, that those strikes should be extended to include larger and larger sections of the community, and that the aim is not to protest, but to fit into a campaign to paralyze the war machine. Now, I'll come back to that later. But the second reason that we're going to the White House is that we believe that Richard Nixon pulled the trigger that shot the Kent students. He pulled the trigger in any realistic sense, first of all, by invading Cambodia. Nixon's secret plan to end the war was so secret that it wasn't even known to Richard Nixon. Secondly, by bombing North Vietnam. And the idea that this was some kind of protection of reconnaissance planes is as far from the truth as Johnson's claims when he was bombing North Vietnam that they were simply bombing steel and concrete. The fact is that when you're attacking a rural, so-called underdeveloped country, which lacks nerve centers like New York or Washington or London or Berlin, the people become the enemy, the population becomes the enemy. And the major effect of the bombing of North Vietnam was to destroy the cities, destroy the villages, and to attack the people. And the bombing, for instance, has always relied very heavily on anti-personnel bombs, these little, sometimes called fragmentation bombs, sometimes called pellet bombs, which send out little bits of pellets so small that sometimes they can't even be found inside the body of the victim, but are absolutely useless against steel or concrete or supply dumps or anything else. Now, I think, the second way in which Nixon pulled the trigger, or the third way, was by calling the student protesters bums, by unleashing Vice President Agnew, who, it's a cliche now to say that Agnew is the Nixon of the Nixon administration, but to do the dirty gut fighting. Nixon even gave him a speechwriter to write the speeches. And he has created a climate of hostility, of fear, and he's crystallized the wrong issues. They constantly talk, and this is one reason they're giving the Washington Monument area, which is being turned down for that kind of a rally. He's constantly speaking as if the issue was whether or not the demonstrators were going to be peaceful. Well, as a matter of fact, in a certain sense, I think they are going to be peaceful. But the real question is not whether the demonstrators are going to be peaceful or not, but whether it's going to be a peaceful weekend in Cambodia. Whether it's going to be a peaceful weekend in the jails of Connecticut and the jails of New York and the jails of Jersey City and the jails of all the other cities where the Black Panthers have been rounded up and are serving time. So we're going to Washington not to be unpeaceful, but we're going to Washington to launch a new stage in the anti-war movement, a new stage which was symbolized for at least about 30,000 people in New Haven last weekend. A new stage in which people recognize and emphasize that what happens in the external colony in Cambodia, Vietnam, the rest of Indochina, cannot be separated from what happens in the internal colony, the black communities of the United States. And conversely, what happens in the internal colony cannot be separated from what happens in the external colony. And on that score, I remember that years ago when I was, believe it or not, in divinity school, that there was a sentence, a phrase, that always struck me as being right on, really a question. And that was, how can you love God whom you have not seen if you do not love your brother whom you have seen? And the anti-war movement today is saying, how can we love the Cambodians whom we have not seen if we do not love the Black Panthers and the black community whom we have seen? And I'm glad to say that the student strike in these several hundred colleges throughout the country is taking that approach and has united the demand to end the aggression in Indochina and to end the repression in the black community, in the student community, in the United States. Now, I think what happened when Richard Nixon invaded Cambodia could be compared to a military coup. In effect, the Pentagon and those elements of the military-industrial complex who are unwilling to face the fact that they have no business in Asia, that they're getting defeated in Asia, that the American people want them to come home, those people, in effect, seized the machinery of the government and made a decision to commit an unprovoked and flagrant extensive aggression, not only without consulting the American people, not only without consulting Congress and the Senate, but actually in opposition to the expressed opinion, the clear opinion of the American people that that aggression must not take place and that the war must be stopped. And I don't want to oversimplify matters, but I think it's worth considering that the United States today is out of control, that the government is out of control, that the government is marching toward total disaster, and that unless the American people assert themselves, and unless they refuse to be satisfied with one-day demonstrations or with any continuation of business as usual, that we will end up in total disaster. Now, I think it's obvious on the surface of it, simply from reading the facts, from the things that slip through, from the contradictions and conflict within the establishment itself. What a significant headline in the New York Times today, that Secretary Hickel was bawling out the president, and according to the Times, 85 universities, but actually it's over 300, were on strike. It shows how what Nixon did in Cambodia and Vietnam and at Kent is a bone in the throat of every honest American, whatever his political views, whatever his attitudes on other subjects. And I think that if people would think back to the May Days in Paris of 1968, that we're having our own May Days now. And I'm talking about paralyzing the war machine, I'm talking about general strike, and so are thousands of other people. But no self-elected bureaucracy, or no small group, or no large group can call for such a strike and make it happen. But I do believe that every American has been slapped in the face by what has happened, that people realize that Nixon is at least as big a liar as Johnson was, that Nixon is either a captive of other forces that are destroying our country and may destroy the world. And so as the May strikes in Paris in 68 spread until factories were shut down and cities were shut down, so it is at least possible that if we think in that way, and if we don't allow Nixon to deflect us or anybody else to deflect us into lesser ways of acting or into examination of false issues such as the peacefulness or the violence of the anti-war movement rather than the violence of the government, it may very well be that these will be our May Days and that the machine will be ground to a halt. And anything less is unsatisfactory. I said I'd, beyond what was on the surface, I'd say a word or two about why I think it was something close to a military coup in Washington when they invaded Cambodia. And all of Nixon's backtracking now and assurances that, well, they'll only go 21 miles, or that they'll be out in 8 weeks, or his meeting finally with some of the Kent students after clearly implying, as a follow-up to his bum remark, clearly implying that the students themselves were responsible for their own death. Despite all that, well, let me say what I think was at stake in Cambodia. I think that Nixon and some other people who are making the decisions in this country, or have been making the decisions, if one wants to look at it charitably, are caught between the Pentagon and the American people. If they withdraw from Vietnam, they withdraw from Indochina, if they face the inevitable fact that they have been defeated and cannot win and shouldn't win anyway, they lose the Pentagon. But if they stay in Vietnam, if they stay in Indochina, if they continue with the kind of adventure that they're on now, an adventure is too kind a word for it, murderous, genocidal adventure, if they do that, then they lose the American people. And so, either with a decision to simply run roughshod over the American people and to institute what will turn out to be American fascism, or, on the other hand, succumbing to the ignorance, the blindness, the self-deception of the American military, which has been present consistently throughout the war, they've decided to go into Cambodia to get a quick victory in order to come back. But the fact is, if they couldn't pacify the people of South Vietnam, they're not going to be able to pacify the people of Cambodia. If they couldn't contain and handle the guerrilla forces in South Vietnam, they're not going to be able to do it in a wider territory. I think that even if you read the ordinary press, you don't have to listen to WBAI. You can find out, for this at least, you can find out that they have moved into a trap in Cambodia. As always, the Vietnamese or the Khmer Rouge, the Cambodians, whoever it is that they think they're after or that they're really after, have eluded them. After 2 days, they had captured 7 rifles. They had not had any significant military encounter with the enemy. And the tempo of the war, the tempo of the Vietnamese attacks on the American aggressors in South Vietnam had stepped up. They never can keep that secret that they kept from the American people, that they kept from the American Congress, they can never keep that from the natives of Indochina. Because basically, except for a few leftover French colonial officers and corrupt dictators and profiteers, the people are solidly united against Western control, Western aggression, Western colonialism. They went through a series of these sweep operations in the Ashau Valley, and I happened to be in Hanoi when one of these was going on. I'd been in Saigon a week or two earlier, and then I was in Hanoi. And every morning early, 1, 2 o'clock in the morning, I listened to the Voice of America and the BBC on shortwave radio. And they talked about this tremendous military encounter, which was turning out to be the greatest victory of the American forces, and how this was going to speeden up the end of the war, how this was going to pin the ears back of the elusive Vietnamese. And every morning I went down to breakfast, and the Vietnamese told me about what a slaughter it was for the Americans, how they had moved into a trap, how the Vietnamese withdrew until they could come in on their own terms. And I honestly did not know what to believe. Today, I think I would know, even on that much evidence. But at that time, I didn't know who to believe or really what was happening. And when I got back to New York, I still did not know. And I went into an office in New York even before going home, and I met with some of my friends in Liberation Magazine and in the anti-war movement, and I told about this. And I think it was Paul Goodman who was there said, well, look at this, and he handed me a copy of the New York Times, and the American general who had been in charge of that major military operation similar to the present Cambodian operation in the Ashau Valley had been transferred. And the Pentagon was saying somewhat lamely that he wasn't being fired or demoted for having lost the battle. You can read about how they're bombing the cities and the towns, how they're burning the villages, how they're shooting the livestock, how the Cambodians, whatever their attitude was before, which in some cases might have been neutrality, in other cases wasn't, but how the Cambodians are being driven into the arms. I hesitate on the word driven because I don't mean to sound like a bad thing, but they're being pushed into the arms of the Khmer Rouge and the NLF. And so, without meaning to frighten you, although I think the events of the day are enough to frighten, should be enough to frighten everybody, we're next going to be at a stage where the withdrawal that should have taken place 6 days, 6 weeks, 6 months, 6 years ago, any time it would have happened, it would have been better than now, where that withdrawal will have to take place under more embarrassing terms to the United States, or else the United States will have to pursue once again the illusion of a quick victory. And at that point, faced with the same fundamental decision as it has faced and decided wrongly on during all of these years, there's only one final way in which the United States could think that it could achieve a quick victory, and that is nuclear warfare. So I don't know why I keep, what keeps coming to my mind is to say, I don't want to frighten you. The fact is I do want to frighten you, and the fact is I think everybody's frightened already. But what I'm trying to say is I don't want to speak glibly or loosely or in exaggerated terms. I want to speak as carefully as I can and as precisely about the actual situation in which I think the United States finds itself today. I think it finds itself in a situation where a partial military coup has already taken place in Washington, a de facto military coup, where the anger and the resistance of the American people, starting primarily in the student community, where that has forced them to hold back a little. They're not holding back on the sweeps and on the attacks and on the genocidal bombing, but to hold back a little bit in their rhetoric and to do these little things like meeting with the Kent students and donating a rally site at the Washington Monument and talking about being out in 7 days. But that much of a military coup has already taken place. And if the American people do not assert their power and their determination, if they do not set aside every other consideration for the next 6 or 8 weeks, the period in which Nixon says that the Cambodian adventure will be over, if they do not do that, I think that we can face, perhaps for the entire community, the kind of fascism which has already come down on the Black Panthers, and the kind of escalation which can lead to nuclear war and to World War III. So we're going to Washington as a supplement to the strikes that are already on hand. We're going there, in a sense, to place Nixon under house arrest. We're going there, in a sense, to lay siege to the White House. And we're going there to make very clear that the kind of thing which has started already should and must escalate, and that we will not be put off by words, we will not be put off by promises, because we know that we cannot trust them, and we know the situation is too far gone for that. Now, one final consideration. I referred to the weekend in New Haven in support of the Black Panthers, not just Chairman Bobby and Erica Huggins, but all of the Black Panthers everywhere who are victims of this coordinated, programmed attack to wipe them out. And something very important happened there, I think. I think the movement got itself together, at least those elements that were there. First of all, as I said, in uniting internal aggression and external aggression and knowing that we had to include both of those at all times and unite them and not emphasize one against the other. But secondly, I think we began, or the people there began, to develop a disciplined, coordinated, and serious movement. Now, what do I mean by that?